That's the reality. The show must go on, and here we go.
Peter B. Collins!
Where's my music? Well, you get to see live on Facebook why we record podcasts and edit out the blunders. Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Friday, March 24th, 2017. And oh, it's chaos in Washington, D.C. We're going to bring you commentary on that, and we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. It's live video on Facebook here on Friday afternoon as we record the Peter B. Collins News and Comment podcast that will be available at our regular audio outlets at peterbcollins.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, wherever you find the Peter B. Collins podcast. Now, a lot of people remember that Donald Trump used to own casinos. In fact, he gambled and lost big in Atlantic City. And the gambler is back in action, as he has repeatedly rebuffed efforts by Paul Ryan to delay today's vote. The vote to repeal and replace Obamacare with a package that is so bad that it has fractured the Republican Party and pretty well unified the Democrats. And at my deadline here, I don't have full resolution, but the latest information coming from Washington is that Paul Ryan rushed over to the White House to huddle with Trump, apparently begging him to allow him to pull the bill and cancel the vote. But the president insisted that lawmakers cast their public votes this afternoon. So from what I can tell, that should be going on right now. And it appears that Trump is going to lose this vote. And Nancy Pelosi has been giving him some free advice over the last couple of days. As you know, she was the Democratic speaker who managed to get Obamacare through the House and up to the Senate, where it was ultimately passed. And as you know, the Republicans boycotted entirely. Not a single Republican vote supported the Affordable Care Act in the House. And we're going to see almost the mirror of that today, as the Democrats will be unified in their opposition to the Trump care, Ryan care, death care, whatever you want to call it. And this is really stunning, because the Republicans have been talking about this, campaigning on it for 7 years, almost since the moment that Barack Obama signed the Affordable Care Act into law. And the idea that they weren't prepared for this, that even after the surprise election of Trump in November, they knew they had control of the House and were likely to control the Senate as they do. But the Republicans really were not prepared. They were caught flat-footed on this. And as the process ground on, what we saw them doing was lowering the bar more and more. And it is astounding and truly sad that the bill that is unlikely to pass in the House today repeals the fundamentals of employer-paid health care coverage here in the United States. And keep in mind that Obamacare really addressed a very small part of the market for health insurance. People like me who are self-employed. I'm an Obamacare customer. I've got my complaints about Obamacare, but don't take it away and give me this crappy package that is being fondled by the right wing in Washington right now. And it has gutted the essential health benefits that the Affordable Care Act set up to provide essentially a floor for the minimum standards for health insurance in this country. And with a fig leaf of saying, well, the states can decide whether these essential health benefits will be covered in their policies or not. But let's follow that through to the logical expression. One of the centerpieces of Republican reform is, oh, we're going to let the states decide how to fashion their own health insurance standards, and then we're going to let people buy coverage across state lines. Now, here in California, we have higher standards than they do in Mississippi. And the idea is that the free market would allow an idiot in California to buy cheaper coverage in Mississippi. And putting aside the manipulation of that fictional individual, it's just really amazing how the Republicans have decided that despite the clear evidence that free market delivery of health care in this country is a proven failure, just like, self-regulation on Wall Street, deregulation, the elimination of all kinds of federal regulations, the Republicans imagine that everything's going to be hunky-dory if you just let the profiteers run the operation. And this is a tragedy that is unfolding. We know that people, if the Republicans have their way, will get crappy coverage with higher deductibles, and that many people will not be covered. 24 million by the estimate of the bean counters in Washington, the CBO. Now, Newt Gingrich, the former Republican speaker who, has been pretty supportive of Trump and of Ryan, well, he tweeted out today, "Why would you schedule a vote on a bill that is at 17% approval? Have we forgotten everything Reagan taught us?" Well, Trump doesn't know anything about this stuff, and he is fumbling along trying to figure out a way forward so that, he can pull together the diverse factions in his party. So for some, he is simply threatening that, hey, this is your final chance for a great plan. The art of the deal guy is throwing out ultimatums when he doesn't have leverage. And it is a severe miscalculation on his part. He's so desperate that he's pandering to the pro-life and the anti-Planned Parenthood people, because if Obamacare is not repealed, then Planned Parenthood continues to get funding from the federal government. So this is a bizarre, and I did not predict that this would descend into this kind of infighting in the Republican Party. And so this could be a good day for the rest of us, because the Republican machine that Trump took over, and of course there's very little party loyalty, and he doesn't do anything to foster that. So this could be the beginning of a huge fracture in the Republican Party from which they will never recover. But are the Democrats poised to really take advantage of this and really champion the interests of little people? Well, earlier this week, I released an in-depth interview with my friend Thomas Frank. Tom Frank wrote the book, What's the Matter with Kansas? Most recently, he has published a book called Listen Liberal. And the fascinating thing that we discussed is the factions in the Democratic Party. And Tom Frank's book, Listen Liberal, explains how, starting with Bill Clinton and the Democratic Leadership Council, that the Democrats intentionally moved to the center, and they took delight in eviscerating people they saw as disposable lefties. Remember Queen Latifah? I sure do. And so here's an excerpt from the conversation with Tom Frank, where we talked about the Democrats today, and it's an open question whether they can actually capitalize on the problems in the Republican Party. And I see on my Facebook screen here, Rich Robinson is letting me know that Trump has capitulated already, that they have pulled the bill. So this is a victory for Democrats. What will they do with it? Here's that excerpt from Tom Frank.
As far as I can tell, Trump's great appeal to these voters, if there is an issue where he appeals to them rather than just symbolically, and a huge part of it just is symbolism. It's just the way he talks, you know.
Agreed.
But if there's an issue where he appeals to these voters, it's the trade issue. Where he says, look, NAFTA has ruined your town, and I'm going to renegotiate it. And this really strikes at the guilty conscience of Washington Democrats, of D.C. Democrats, of Hillary Clinton Democrats. It's not an issue where they really can that they feel comfortable coming back and responding to in kind. Although Hillary is on the record as saying she's against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which she herself negotiated, and she's also said that she's now thinks NAFTA was a bad idea, even though it's her husband's great accomplishment. But then we remember that Barack Obama said the same thing in 2008, and so you've got this long record of Democratic politicians talking about these issues and then just changing their tune as soon as they get into office. And we all suspect that everybody knows that Hillary is going to do the same.
So you can check out the full conversation with Tom Frank. It's available at peterbcollins.com. So the New York Times has some interesting commentary even before this obvious debacle for the Republicans. Trump has laid out markers of who he can blame because, of course, Trump is never at fault. He's never wrong. He's never factually challenged. And he's ready to blame Paul Ryan, saying that Ryan insisted on doing the health care bill before tax cuts. Now, Ryan probably had a reasonable point that you had to have the health care reform in order to steal money from poor Medicaid recipients in order to fund the tax cuts for the rich and corporations. Now, I don't know exactly how Trump would have staged this to try to cut taxes before he grabbed the money from Obamacare to pay for it, but that appears to be the early thread of the blame game that will likely erupt big time in Washington over the next few days. Nancy Pelosi has been effectively tweaking Trump. She's been using the term rookie and calling it amateur hour. He seems to think that a charm offensive or a threat will work, that saying, I can do this for you or I can do this against you will work. That's not the way it works. You have to build real consensus. You have to gain real knowledge of the policy. And the president hasn't done either of those things. So, Mr. Art of the Deal, I guess we'll run away to Mar-a-Lago this weekend and try to sort things out. But this is a day of celebration for average Americans who didn't get screwed. Now, there's plenty of opportunity for them to continue to try to screw us. And you know that they are actively trying to figure that out right now. If you'd like to comment, I'd like to hear from you. I've got lines open here at the studio at 415-455-0102. As I mentioned at the beginning, I had to reschedule my Facebook Live feed for today because I was planning to catch a plane later on, and the flight's been canceled, so it's thrown me into a little bit of confusion here. But I look forward to talking with you. And I have a bonus today. I'm going to give away a free book to the third caller that we put on the air between now and the top of the next hour. Again, my number is 415-455-0102. And the third caller who goes on the air gets a copy of Robbie Robertson's memoir about his life with the band, the great musical act that started as Bob Dylan's backup band and went on to great success in their own right. And his book is called Testimony, and I've got a free copy for the third person that we put on the air here at the Peter B. Collins live video feed on Facebook today. 415-455-0102 is my number. And feel free to call even if you don't agree with me. This is not a a fan club. At least that's not the way I intend it. So feel free to take me on if you hear something that you don't agree with. David Brooks is the conservative columnist for the New York Times, who also appears on the Public Television News Hour. And he tells us in his column today that he hated Obamacare. He's a free market guy. But he appears to hate the Republican health care bill even more. He describes it as a pure top-down document. It was not molded to the actual health care needs of regular voters. It doesn't have support from actual American voters or much interest in those voters. It was written by elites to serve the needs of elites. This is a Republican saying this. They went on to say that the first goal was to simply repeal Obamacare so that they could say they had done it. Then Trump needed a victory to salve his ego and make it seem like he's actually an effective president. And Brooks notes that his lobbying efforts were substance-free. It was all about Trump, providing him with a pelt, polishing a credential for Trump. His lobbying revealed the vapidity of his narcissism. He didn't mind caving to the Freedom Caucus Wednesday night on policy because he doesn't care about policy. He's kind of like the late owner of the Oakland Raiders, Al Davis, who didn't care if the guys cheated or brutalized their opponents. It was just win, baby. Later in the column, Brooks says this House Republican plan would increase suffering, morbidity, and death among the middle class and poor in order to provide tax cuts to the rich. Now, that's a very honest assessment of the real motive behind these Republican actions. So, at least for the moment, we can say that this little squabble has failed to repeal Obamacare, and the insurance industry, I don't think, is going to wait too much longer. They're going to start renewing policies for 2018, and this train may have left the station, which is one reason that Trump is saying, either pass this thing or I'm moving on. And so we'll see how all that plays out. Earlier this week, I declared a truth emergency. And I borrowed that term from my friends at Project Censor at Sonoma State University, Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips. Back in 08, they declared a truth emergency during the Bush administration. And I think we really have hit a new low in American honesty. I mean, even the Wall Street Journal this week, did you see that editorial? They said that Trump lies so much, he clings to falsehoods like a drunk to an empty gin bottle. That's coming from the Wall Street people who stand to benefit the most from Trump's irrational and radical policies. And I took a look at Rachel Maddow. The other night on her program, which is now kind of a serialized Russian spy novel, she introduces a new character who Putin has killed almost every night. And Rachel Maddow is getting huge audiences. Last week with the David K. Johnston revelation of 2 pages of a Trump tax return from 2005, Maddow got her highest ratings ever. 4 million people watched. So she's riding a wave. And I know a lot of people who watch her and believe everything she says. But you have to be very careful because she weaves in her theories, which are pure speculation, about Trump's ties to Russian oligarchs and the claim that Putin and the Russians manipulated the election in favor of Trump. Now, as I've said many times, we may ultimately see proof of that. But so far, we haven't seen a shred of evidence. And Rachel Maddow, on her show the other night, wove together these claims about Russian bot attacks, promoting fake news to American social media users during the campaign. And I want you to listen carefully to what she had to say, because she uses weasel words, and it may be this and it may be that, but she leaves you with a firm impression, an impression that is not based on actual evidence. Take a listen.
So again, timeline here, February, Kremlin threatening / promising that they're going nuclear in their information war. March, their GRU attacks the Democratic Party and steals all their data. We see all the fruits of that by the summer.
So right there, she just asserted that Russia hacked the DNC servers. We still have no proof of that. We have a series of assertions and assessments and consistent with, but there is no public evidence to support that notion. And she just treats it as fact and then builds on, well, a very shaky foundation.
But that spring, April and May, the other thing that they started doing was a huge industrial-sized bot attack. This was not a joke. They used automated social media bots and what appeared to be paid operatives in Russia and other countries, specifically to target Bernie supporters. When John Mattis, the administrator on that Bernie site in San Diego, when John Mattis started tracking down the site's domain registrations, the trail led to places like Macedonia and Albania.
And that's not Russia. But she makes the clear implication that these bot activities all came from Russia. And we know, we've known for a long time, that it's possible to obscure IP addresses. The Vault 7 release from WikiLeaks shows that the CIA was using stuff they stole from the Russians to make it look like when they hacked, it had been the Russians doing the hacking. And Rachel Maddow is, I think, on the verge of perhaps really discrediting herself with the compound speculation that she presents on her show every night. And if you take a look carefully at what she covers and what she chooses not to cover, for example, she talked about the bots and the fake news, and one of the links is to Macedonia. Now, in Macedonia, we know there was a teenager there who made $60,000 running a fake news website during the election. And yet we are told to believe that he is a Russian operative. Now, there's a lot of stuff that is murky here, and I don't pretend to have all the facts or all the information or substantial evidence. But I know that the Clinton campaign, using the dark money super PAC Correct the Record, spent more than $1 million to hire internet trolls. And there were these phony news websites like ShareBlue, Blue Nation Review, and Politicus USA. And so there were a lot of disinformation efforts that were going on, and they were not all external. There was a lot of it that was going on internally, funded and paid for and controlled by American operatives. And when we look at the Republican efforts to suppress voter participation, particularly by Democrats, the photo ID scams, the interstate cross-check list, well, we know the games that they played. And just today, there's a New York Times story here about how at the state level, in Arkansas, in Iowa, and in Nebraska, they are still promoting voter ID laws, despite the fact that there is zero evidence of any substantial voter fraud. Out of 860 Nebraskans who voted last fall, there are two suspected of casting fraudulent votes. In Colorado, a Republican activist and radio talk show host who said that virtually every case of voter fraud I can remember in my lifetime was committed by Democrats. Well, he was just popped for, his name is Steve Curtis, accused of filling out a ballot addressed to his ex-wife who lives in South Carolina. So we have this constant effort by Republicans to control and manipulate the election, and it's very convenient to blame it on the Russians these days. And there's a lot of that going on. You're watching live on Facebook, the Peter B. Collins podcast, and I'm opening up the phone lines. We'll take your calls in about 7 minutes here. Grant is now at the desk to put you on hold and get your information. So if you'd like to get on the line, I do have the free Robbie Robertson book for the third caller who gets on the air. My number is 415-455-0102. That's 415-455-0102. And every day I pause for a second to thank the people who support my work here at the podcast with your subscriptions. And I want to single out one guy today. Joshua Sisko is a brand new subscriber to the podcast, and it was enabled by his wife. And she set it up because Saturday is Joshua's birthday. So a shout out to Joshua Sisko. Thanks for subscribing. Hope you and I'm forgetting it's a Marissa or it's a Maria kind of name. I'm sorry. But Joshua, I hope you guys have a great birthday. And thank you for listening and supporting the Peter B. Collins podcast. Now, one of the elements that people have cited as a possible basis for impeachment of Trump is the lease on the former post office building down the street from the White House that is now the Trump International Hotel. And the lease language we thought was pretty clear. No member or delegate to Congress or elected official of the government of the United States shall be admitted to any share or part of this lease. Well, a contracting officer at the General Services Administration issued a 166-page ruling and said the tenant is in full compliance. What? I'm sorry. That simply is unbelievable. Got a few other stories that I want to share with you today. Steve Horn is a young journalist who covers fracking and pipelines and climate change at DSmog Blog. And he's had a good week. A couple of days ago, he published a piece that I made the lead story on our podcast because a new study by Purdue University shows that natural gas power plants that we thought were much cleaner than coal-fired power plants are actually spewing 21 to 120 times more methane than previously estimated. Now, I'm happy to report that here in California, air quality officials have approved what are considered to be the most rigorous regulations for controlling methane emissions, and we've got some catching up to do because we had a massive methane leak at a facility in Southern California in 2015 that really did a whole lot of damage. The other big story by Horn is something he's been working on, he says, for 7 or 8 years. And it's about an effort to sequester carbon using what's called biochar. And it's a high-heat chemical reaction applied to convert the carbon-containing biomass to a stable, non-decomposing form of charcoal. And this was seen as the silver bullet that was going to help us deal with our carbon emissions. And he's written this lengthy article. I've linked to it in the show file for the podcast that you can find at peterbcollins.com. And he's essentially saying that the technology really didn't scale very well, and it appears to be falling out of favor. As expected, the Trump administration has formally issued a permit for the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. Now, it may not all be over because protests may continue, and the demand for the tar sands crude that is coming from Canada to flow through the Keystone XL has dropped because of the low price of spot oil. So it may still not really come to its full fruition. But this is an example of one of the things that Obama didn't complete. It's an incomplete on his report card. He delayed the Keystone XL, but he didn't kill it. And likewise, I give Obama an incomplete on his response to the Arab Spring, because it was 6 years ago that Hosni Mubarak was deposed in Egypt, the longtime dictator who'd enjoyed great support from the United States. And Obama took a huge risk and helped push him out. But a year and a half later, Obama had gone silent on the aspirations of those who live under dictatorship in the Middle East, and he quietly allowed the coup against the freely elected Mohamed Morsi to go forward, and we now have a worse dictator than Mubarak, General al-Sisi, running the show in Egypt. Obama also was silent on the aspirations of the citizens of Hong Kong for true democracy, and this weekend we're going to see the impact of that, because the next chief executive will be selected by a committee stacked with supporters of the Beijing government. And the efforts to win real democracy for the people of Hong Kong have not paid off so far. But there is one candidate running, John Tsang, T-S-A-N-G, who appears to be acceptable to Beijing, but also has some support in the pro-democracy movement. So we'll see if there's a little ray of sunshine able to break through there. Rexxon Tillerson, the former CEO of ExxonMobil, who is now playing the role of Secretary of State, issued the extreme vetting standards of the Trump administration. And basically, it's going to discourage tourism and business travel to the United States in ways that may be worse than you might think. The instructions to embassies around the world, except in 38 countries that we consider friendly, requires people to submit their social media information and passwords to an American investigator before they can be granted a visa into the United States. I think there's going to be a lot of blowback and pushback from this, and it doesn't make us any safer. That clearly is just an illusion. I'm open to your phone calls right now. Lines are open at 415-455-0102. You can comment on the debacle. Trump has officially pulled the bill from the House consideration, and how they will regroup and try to ram that through again is anybody's guess. 415-455-0102. And I've got the free book, the Robbie Robertson book, for the third caller who gets on the air in the next half hour. 415-455-0102. I have a lot of respect for a young reporter named Kevin Gostola, who is the editor-in-chief now at shadowproof.com. And he has an interesting take that I hadn't picked up elsewhere on the hearings, the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Judge Gorsuch. Now, Neil Gorsuch is going to be filibustered by the Democrats. I'm pleased to see that. Joe Manchin is likely to break ranks from the Democratic caucus, but it looks like Chuck Schumer will be able to hold many, if not all, the other senators in opposing Neil Gorsuch. It remains to be seen if they can really mount an effective filibuster, if the Republicans will gut it with the nuclear option by changing the rules of the Senate. But it's fair to say that Neil Gorsuch danced around all of the issues that were raised. There were some important ones, like his connection to billionaire Phil Anschutz. And Anschutz really intervened with the Bush administration to get Gorsuch appointed to the appeals court where he sits today. And what Gostola points out is that Judge Gorsuch has a real hardline attitude against the prisoners at Guantanamo and the lawyers who defend them. And he was exposed for a couple of emails that he wrote, kind of his equivalent of Trump's locker room talk, but no personal parts were grabbed or no discussion of that. But anyway, Dick Durbin grilled him on this, and Gorsuch said that, well, you know, I have a friend, Neil Katyal, who has represented some of those detainees. I have nothing but admiration, but the email that I wrote where I slammed the people who defend the prisoners at Guantanamo was not my finest moment blowing off steam with a friend privately. Okay, so he kind of apologized. But more important than whether he respects the attorneys or not, he seems to believe that the habeas counsel, the lawyers for the prisoners at Guantanamo, have been eager to testify about conditions and that they use tricks. So he clearly has an attitude against the people who are interned at Guantanamo. And there are a couple of cases that will be up before the court in the next year or two that really are significant about the rights of individuals at Guantanamo. So it's another reason for the filibuster. It remains to be seen if they're going to get the kind of traction that they need. So that's pretty much my podcast for today. I have a few more stories I'll weave in here, but I want to take your phone calls right now. The only problem is there's nobody on the line. So I want you to fix that. Call in right now at 415-455-0102. I'd like to hear your comments on the infighting in the Republican Party that developed into this legislative debacle on Capitol Hill today. I'd like to know what you think of the way the Democrats have been mounting opposition to Trump and to the Republican majorities in both houses. So call in right now. I'd love to hear from you at 415-455-0102. So one of the other things that occurred this week was the arbitrary laptop ban that was announced despite the fact that the Trump administration has not moved forward to appeal the court decisions that have put on hold the Royal Decree 2.0, the Trump travel ban, that was revised and lawyered up to try to overcome the obvious defects of the Steve Bannon version that was published on January 27th. And despite the claims by Trump that, you know, we are in imminent danger of a terrorist who's going to slip through on an airliner and kill Americans, it really is surprising that we haven't seen the appeals, but we did see this kind of bizarre laptop ban, and it only relates to 10 airports in 8 countries. It only relates to nonstop flights from those cities to the United States. And it is so obvious what the rules are. If I'm a bad guy and I've developed a laptop with a bomb in it, I know I'm not going to fly into the U.S. from one of those 10 cities. I'll have to come in from Rome or Paris or London instead of one of the prescribed cities in the Middle East. So this is another irrational effort, and it appears to be a desperate measure by the Trump team to get something going in terms of changing the protocols for people visiting this country. But as I mentioned a moment ago, I think it has the great risk of depressing tourism and business travel, and that this could happen soon and last for quite a long time. 415-455-0102 is my number. I'll stand by here for a few more minutes to see if you'd like to call in and comment on some of the stories of the day. 415-455-0102. Now, when I wrap up this podcast, I'm going to be releasing another in-depth interview to my subscribers today, and this one is a little different. I did a Skype interview with a Danish psychologist who's a bit of a contrarian, because he is a critic of the self-improvement craze. His name is Svend Brinkmann, and in a lively conversation, I didn't agree with him on everything, I put a question to him about whether he'd ever seen Bob Newhart, the American comic who played a psychologist on TV. And after his hit show was over, I don't know if you saw this, but Bob Newhart went on, I think it was Mad TV, and he played a psychologist, and a series of people would come in and explain their problems, and invariably he would just say, well, why don't you just stop it? The complaint might be I'm overeating or I'm using drugs. And instead of, you know, listening and being compassionate, he would just say, well, why don't you just stop it? So I asked Svend Brinkmann if he is the Danish equivalent of Bob Newhart. Take a listen to what he said.
I'm a psychologist. I'm not a clinical psychologist. I think of myself as a social psychologist trying to understand psychological phenomena and their cultural and social manifestations. So as a psychologist, I wouldn't say that the answer to all depressions, all people suffering from anxiety or whatever should be, well, stop it. Because I know that some people simply just cannot stop it. But I also know that some people will, in fact, benefit from being told something like this. So I think we should be careful not to develop some kind of one-size-fits-all model here. But I agree. You know, some people become addicted to self-help. They become addicted to, in a way, what I call navel-gazing in the book, to feeling themselves, tuning in onto themselves all the time. There is actually, I'm thinking now of a psychologist, I think he's from California, actually, but he's a very good researcher. His name is Philip Cushman. He wrote a book in the 90s called Constructing the Self, Constructing America. And he's also a therapist. And he says the problem now is that we tell people that the answers are within themselves, are inside. You should only feel what's inside, listen to your inner voice, get in touch with yourself. And then people have been sitting in therapy rooms and elsewhere for decades trying to feel themselves. And he says, this guy, Phil Cushman, that at some point they become numb. You know, they try to feel so much inside themselves that they can no longer feel anything. Hmm. And then they really become depressed, because then there is no meaning. If meaning is found inside yourself by in your inner voice and you cannot hear it and you cannot feel it, then there is no meaning.
So check it out. The in-depth interview will be posted a little bit later today. And Svend Brinkmann's book is called Stand Firm, Resisting the Self-Improvement Craze. I think you'll find it pretty interesting. And I'm going to take your calls now. Lines available at 415-455-0102. And Susan is on the screen here saying, where are the calls? And I'm saying, Susan, where's your call? And I see your other question, and the answer there, Susan, is yes. Carl's on the line from Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Carl, how you doing?
Hey, good afternoon, sir. I must apologize. While I was on hold there, I missed the context of that long interview that you're having with that person. What was the what was the context of the interview that you're having with him?
He's a psychologist who has published a book that is featured in bookstores in the self-help section, and it's basically a critique of self-help movements.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry. That was the line that I missed. That was the...
Right.
That was
so,
what I wanted to mention... that I said to, I'm sorry, the screener, what's his name?
His name's Grant.
I'm sorry, I'm so terrible with names. Was something that was said, and this has come up before, and I agree with it, in today's majority report with Sam Cedar, which is that basically the Affordable Care Act, among other things, has at this point survived two times from an assault from the right. And the point is that both times, whether it was during the aborted grand bargain talks, which were a disaster,
right,
and now, basically, it wasn't the Democrats who stepped up. It was the fact that it survived because of crazy. And that really is amazing. So crazy at this point has kept it going because the alternative is not crazy enough for their taste.
Yeah.
And the grand bargain, which was vicious, didn't go through because it wasn't severe enough for their taste. And so, there was resistance from the Democrats at that time, but it was not the deciding factor. Crazy was the deciding factor. And so, you know, people like you and I will continue to have coverage because of crazy, or in spite of crazy at best.
Right,
and that's an amazing turn in America, in the American polity. Let's use a crazy word like polity.
Well, and or, let's,
you know,
let's,
which is one of those words like comity, like what?
Yeah, Carl. But, let's go back a year. This is about the time when Jeb Bush had his best line of the primary debates. He said,
what,
"Donald, Donald, you are the chaos candidate."
Right.
And you and I never expected that chaos could actually benefit us, or at least prevent the worst from happening to us.
Yes, it's really funny, even though the smell was already in the air.
Right.
But like at some point, eventually, it is going to come crashing down, and we will have full force idiocracy. But at the moment, the overpowering fight between crazy and whatever foundationally remains of the Constitution, on the other hand, is keeping something, including many Americans, alive. And that is absolutely amazing that in the death throes of the Republic, it's come down to this.
Well, and the, I think, essential premise of Trump and Ryan's approach was that they could sufficiently appeal to Republican greed, that the dangling of the tax cuts, and corporate tax cuts in particular, would be enough to get them to suck it up and accept what they consider to be Obamacare light. And, I also think we have to give credit to Pelosi and the others who did embed Obamacare in ways that make it difficult for them to excise it.
I must give them credit for that, and I don't think I ever saw it coming. But evidently, they are cannier than I think people on the true left realized, and that they did embed it in the tax code, and maybe John Roberts actually made the correct decision.
Well, but also because, going forward, had they gotten the bill through the House today, it would have to get through the Senate. And they have to overcome, of course, the Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul far right wing.
Yes,
but
do.
The other issue there was that they were going to try to do it as reconciliation with 51 votes. Well, the more that the Freedom Caucus loaded on their demands that, you know, you got to cut the element of employer mandates and the basic health care elements. Well, that doesn't qualify for the kind of reconciliation approach that is the only way to get repeal through the Senate, and they had no way of getting whatever kind of replacement they have in mind through the Senate. So
yeah, it's really amazing. It's like the Weasley procedural methods that got the Affordable Health Care Act established seem to be, in the end, the ones that are keeping it in place. And And that's the one that I don't think anybody saw coming.
Yeah. Well, Carl, I appreciate your call. Otherwise, I'd just be sitting here talking to myself.
Well, you know, I mean, as you may have seen, I wasn't planning on calling. But then again, I want to help move the bar from caller number one to caller number three. You know,
well, I've got...
someone else has to have fun with Thomas Frank, too, not just me.
Well, caller two is on the line, so caller three just has to pick up the phone and dial in at 415-455-0102. And before
step up,
you...
caller three, step up, let's go.
Carl, before you go, how yep. was the Thomas Frank bookstore appearance in Columbus the other night?
Quite nice, actually. I had not been to the Book Loft before, and it's an old house in an area called German Village. And they describe it as having 32 rooms, and it's almost a subterranean maze and cave of books, and you go up and you go down, and you go up and down, and you go over here. I had never seen such a place. And I think if someone hadn't actually let me out of the building, I wouldn't have known how to do it. But do check it out sometime. Next time you come down to Cincy, you know, come up and, you know, take a look.
Will do. Thanks, Carl. Good to hear from you.
All right, speak again.
Now let's go all the way to Hawaii, where Rich is on the line. Hey, Rich, how you doing today?
Pretty good, Peter B. How you doing?
I'm good. It's good to hear from you.
Well, it's nice to see you on the podcast again and helping inform the electorate about what's going on. I just wanted to comment on this Trump defeat today.
Yeah.
And it really is a Trump defeat because it was Trump who pulled the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had a choice of forcing the conservatives to vote on the bill and then having to defend that in their district.
Right.
And he was basically saying, this is my bottom line. You guys vote. If you say no, you know, I'll walk away. But it was Trump who pulled the bill. So this is a huge surrender by a guy who supposedly never surrendered.
Right.
And I think that's something that we have to understand politically, because at the end of the day, the man is just a coward, and he's always been a coward. And the fact is that he uses this bluster as a way to pump up his image, but at the end of the day, he folds like paper.
Well, he exposes himself routinely as the most insecure guy on the American scene today.
And I think that that's the way to, if Democrats are going to move the ball forward, I think they're making a huge mistake, and I think they've made a huge mistake in the past, of treating this guy like he's a regular leader, and he's not. And the best way to oppose this guy is to continue to point out that he lost by 3 million votes and to not legitimize the policies by acting as if everything's normal. And so
I think
that's an important fact.
Rich, I'm reminded of what we experienced here in California under the celebrity governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he was a total failure. He accomplished a couple of things, AB 32, the climate change bill, and the redistricting and the top two primary laws. Those are his accomplishments. But the leader of the state Senate, Don Parada, at one point presciently said, Arnold Schwarzenegger is a leader without any followers. And Trump has made a huge mistake because he's not invested. He didn't help anybody on the Republican side get elected, only himself. He doesn't massage the party regulars and the establishment apparatus. And so he, I think, has opened up a fracture in his own party that he may never recover from.
And that's to our benefit.
Indeed.
And that's so thank you very much and continue the good work, my friend.
All right, Rich, good to hear from you. How's Hawaii today?
God, it's beautiful. It's just, you know, it's 80 degrees and clear skies and a lot warmer than it is in California, I'll give you that.
All right, rub it in. Thanks a lot. I've got room for one more call, and you got to get on the line right now, because I have one more story I'm going to relate, and then I'll wrap it up here if I don't have another caller to accept my bonus book. The number to call is 415-455-0102, and Grant is standing by with itchy fingers to take your call. 415-455-0102. This is an interesting commentary piece that was published in the Washington Post yesterday. And you may have heard this week that Ivanka Trump has made it formal that she is going to join the White House staff as an unpaid advisor to the president. She'll have an office in the White House. We're told she'll get a high-level security clearance, and she'll be performing government work but we don't know what her portfolio will be. We know that she's attended a bunch of meetings with her daddy, with foreign leaders, including one with the Japanese prime minister. Ivanka has deals pending in Japan with an entity that is partly owned by the Japanese government. And these huge conflicts of interest continue to exist, and the Trump team is just oblivious to what it all means. And I'm old enough to remember when John F. Kennedy appointed his brother Bobby as Attorney General. And while I supported the policies in general of JFK and RFK, I was never comfortable with that kind of nepotism. And as a result, we passed laws. And Dick Nixon wasn't allowed to appoint a relative to a post. And there was another case where Jimmy Carter wanted to appoint his son to a job, and he was prevented by law from doing that. But somehow, this appears to be optional enforcement on the Trump team. And while Ivanka has officially relinquished daily management of her company, she retains sole ownership. I'm not clear on what percentage of ownership she has in the Trump organization. Her husband is a senior advisor. He has had to recuse himself from matters related to his family's business, but he hasn't insulated himself through blind trusts or divestitures. And so this is a festering problem. And despite the fact that the General Services Administration guy claims that the lease on the old post office building where the Trump Hotel is now in Washington is all fine and dandy, I don't agree with that. And this level of cronyism and corruption is something that we should be fighting hard. We should be resisting, I think, quite forcefully. And I hope that some of you will take that cue and start resisting. Thanks for joining me today for my news and comment podcast, extended to take your phone calls, brought to you live on Facebook with video. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.